All right, and welcome to Fast Break Breakfast, NBA podcast. My name is Keith, and I'm here alone once again for another solo summer podcast. The Olympics are behind us. The FIBA refs destroyed the last minute of the bronze medal game, and now we have entered the post-apocalyptic wasteland of no basketball. And we will be like Imperator Furiosa driving at breakneck speed, hunting for the green place, which is more NBA. Opening night is merely 8 weeks away, though, so we can all make it. To help us make it, we're doing a giveaway this week because we've been stuck on our iTunes reviews for over a month. So here's the deal. The next person who writes us a five-star review on iTunes will win a Fan Essentials box of gear for their favorite team. Plus, anybody who writes a review in August will also be entered for a drawing for another box of Fan Essentials gear. So get on iTunes and get those reviews coming in. All right, my guest today is Ian Levy. He's going to talk to me a little bit about hardwood paroxysm and Team USA and his favorite team, the Indiana Pacers. I enjoyed it talking with him because we've emailed a lot over the last half year, but I've never spoken to him. And I know technically as an editor, it's his job to write me back on emails, but hey, this was voluntary communication. Before we get to it, also, I want to plug another NBA podcast, the Drive and Dish podcast out of Jacksonville, Florida. I know a lot of you hardcore NBA fans are looking for content in the summer, so check out the Drive and Dish podcast. It's one of the best produced basketball podcasts out there, I will say. They do a really good job with their recording and the sound of their show and their content. And here is a little bit more about them.
So we interrupt this great podcast that you're listening to. My name is Kevin Rafuse.
I'm Tim Tompkins.
And I'm Justin Cousart.
And we host the Drive and Dish NBA podcast.
We cover every team in the league and a bunch of really fun segments like Random NBA Player, Drive and Dougal, and Hot Takes from Reddit.
So when you're done listening to this podcast, give us a search on iTunes or whatever podcast streaming app you're listening on.
We're also at driveanddishpodcast.com. We are the Drive and Dish NBA podcast.
All right, so check out the Drive and Dish basketball podcast. Okay, before we get to Ian, just one more plugged in commercial so you can get your skip buttons ready and go straight to Ian in 3, 2, 1. My guest today is the editor-in-chief of Hardwood Paroxysm, a site where our podcast is located. And he is the senior NBA editor and columnist for FanSided. Mr. Ian Levy, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks a lot for having me on.
Man, happy to have you on. Happy to speak to you. I know this might not be interesting to other listeners, but like you're a person I've communicated with a lot through email, through Hardwood Paroxysm and such. And so, yeah, hearing the sound of your voice, never knew what it was going to sound like. So,
I assume it's disappointing.
Well, I thought it would maybe have a little more gravitas. I thought there would be a little deeper, a little raspier, but it's
I have a voice made for silent films, a face made for radio, and a voice made for silent films.
Face and voice made for email.
Yeah.
So, tell me about your involvement about Hardwood Paroxysm. We actually don't talk as much maybe about Hardwood Paroxysm as we should. I know it's a really cool, it's like a basketball site kind of for like really hardcore NBA nerds, which is one of the reasons that we wanted Fast Break Breakfast to be on there. Cause even though we're kind of silly and lowbrow at times, we thought maybe NBA nerds would like us. So tell me more about Hardwood Paroxysm. What don't I know?
So it was Matt Moore, who's now with CBS, full-timer with CBS. I'm not sure what his exact title is, but he started Hardwood Paroxysm. I think it was sort of his personal blog for a couple years. I think he started it in in 2009, and he eventually was asked to join the True Hoop Network at ESPN. And over the years, he invited some additional contributors to write for the blog. And there's a lot of people who are embedded in national media outlets now who originally sort of got their start for Hardwood Paroxysm. Rob Mahoney at Sports Illustrated is a Hardwood Paroxysm alum. Zach Harper at CBS, James Herbert, who's also at CBS, Holly McKenzie, Who works for the score. So anyway, yeah, it was always a general NBA blog that sort of had a beat tone. People were free to chase whatever kind of stories interested them. So there was a lot of different kinds of forms, different styles. And it was one of the blogs that when I sort of first discovered basketball blogs on the internet, it was one that I always read and never even really considered that someday I might be writing for it. But I had my own blog called Hickory High back in the day. And eventually I started writing for the Dallas Mavericks True Hoop blog, and I happened to be invited to cover the MIT Sloan Sports Analytics Conference with a bunch of other people from True Hoop. So I was there sitting across the table from Matt Moore, and I introduced myself, and he said, "Oh, you write for me at HP, right?" And at that point, he had a lot of people writing for him at the site, and I was like, no, I don't, but I'd love to. So he was like, shoot me an email when you get home. So I sent him an email, and that was about 4 years ago. So I've just kind of been hanging around writing there semi-regularly for about 4 years. And then, 2 years ago, we joined Fansided. So I dropped my personal blog. I started running Nylon Calculus, the analytics site for Fansided. Other HP editors, stepped aside into full-time roles or had kids. And, so I was sort of invited to help steer the ship and here we are.
That's good. Yeah, I liked how you said that you use the term embedded, talking about, different people all over the place. And that's kind of how I felt where when I was at covering a Grizzlies game and I had a Hardwood Paroxysm press pass, and someone's like, "Oh, Hardwood Paroxysm, you're one of the good guys." And like, he didn't know my work at all. I was like, "No, I just record podcasts." But he was funny. He's like, how many of you are there?" And I was like, "Man, I don't know. It's like a secret society of..." There's like a, it's just an email list and hundreds, thousands of people embedded all over the country. Who knows? We're like a
secret society for sure. We need to work on a secret handshake, but
it really is like I don't know what the Ra's al Ghul from Batman, what's it? He has like some kind of underground network. I feel like we're similar to that at some point, or maybe like Hydra. At some point we're going to be called to rise up, go on basketball jihad, and it'll be fun.
Yeah. Little sleeper cells within national media outlets.
Exactly. So one of the fun things is when I emailed you guys to be like, "Hey, you should check out our podcast." It was pretty funny because you raised some like content objections, which is funny to me because I'm like the clean one on our podcast. Like I don't even swear in real life, and so it was funny where I had to go to bat for like John and Chuck, those things are important. I don't know. This is what fans talk about. We talk about peeing on Akron. Like you need to pee. And also, cause I know you were concerned about, what a fansided editor might hear.
Yeah.
What is the official Fansided company line on the Matt Barnes, Derek Fisher incident, and how much can we joke about it?
Because
that was the iron was hot right when I first emailed you, and you're like, "You've made some really objectionable." I'm like, "Yeah, if I can't laugh at this, what can we laugh at?"
I think that you guys had t-shirts maybe with Derek Rose or Derek Fisher with a black eye or something like that.
We didn't print any t-shirts, but we did commission a very good black eye Derek Fisher like fathead style cutout, and I was like, domestic violence is bad. Domestic violence is bad. We all agree. Yeah. That's why we can all laugh when two millionaires are fighting each other. Like, if we can't do that, what do we have?
Yeah, I don't know what the official line there is. I did not get the memo. We are nice at Hardwood Proxim. We have a little more wiggle room, and some of that's our history. We take things seriously, but I'd like to think we take the right things seriously. And there's some things that we know not to take seriously and that we don't have to take seriously. And luckily, we sort of have the freedom to make some of those choices ourselves. But
I would say there's also a lot of leeway in anonymity, like we kind of have that. We thought maybe joining Harvard Paroxysm would give us a big listener bump.
My Twitter account has become in some small ways increasingly professional, I'd like to think, over the last 6 months. I no longer talk about red wine stains on my sweatpants and things of that nature.
Right. Well, that is one of the funny things that we're doing now that I don't know if we're getting Fast Break Breakfast is getting more official, but like now that I've like interviewed players, it's like, am I allowed to say really bad things about the guys I just had on my show? Like, I don't, it's kind of weird. Oh, they'll never listen. So
yeah, certainly have the space. I guess it all depends on if you want them to come back or not.
That's right. That's right. All right, well, let's talk about some basketball, so maybe people will want to know what we think about that. Did you get a chance to watch? I know you were on vacation, but you ended up watching much of the Olympics?
I caught a few games here or there. I was unplugged a lot. This was my end of the summer roundup. But, I caught enough to get a sense of who was having fun and who was not.
Who was not having fun in your estimation?
I watched a lot of Team USA not having fun, right. which was kind of frustrating. And I caught a little bit of Spain early in the tournament when they were really struggling. And that was ugly to watch.
Right. Do you think that the Team USA maybe in pool play was kind of the coaches were playing possum, where they weren't maybe running their real stuff or setting up their actual defensive, you know, fronts and strategies they might use?
I think it was more just sort of an effort and engagement thing. You know, there's a bunch of guys on this team who had not played in the Olympics before. I think there was only a handful of guys who had Olympic experience. Some of these guys had played like in FIBA World Cup and stuff like that. And I think, if you're on Team USA, I would imagine you roll in knowing or assuming that the gold is yours. And, you know, that it maybe takes you a while to sort of wrap your head around the level of competition. I can't remember the numbers. I looked them up the other day for something else. But a guy at Nylon Calculus did a statistical study that looked at all of these different leagues and international tournaments and stuff, and sort of came up with an objective way in ranking the level of difficulty in each thing. So obviously like an NBA playoff game is the highest level of competition. An NBA regular season game is below that. And the Olympics are a lower level of competition than an NBA regular season game. You know, there's plenty of NBA players on those other rosters, but there's also, you know, a handful of teams that don't have any NBA players who are there in the Olympics. And, you know, even the teams who do have NBA players, you know, it's maybe only five or six guys deep, and then the rest of the roster is sort of filled out with, you know, with other players from international leagues. So, you know, if you go in and you're thinking, you know, this is going to be easier than a regular season game, you know, some nights it might be, but, you know, you can get caught off guard by that. You know, even the Warriors lost regular season games last season. So, I think it was probably some of that mental.
Never again.
Never again, yeah.
Never again.
And the Knicks are both shooting for 82-0 this year. We'll see how that collides.
A brief aside: I don't ever read the quotes when like quotes like that blow up, and I just see it on Twitter. I don't even follow up. Now, did Derek? The clip I saw, did Derrick Rose just say he expects to win, or because the clip I saw was him just saying like we're a team that can win every game. Not like we're a team that can go 82-0, but we're a team that every night we can win that game.
Yeah. I think it was more like, I think we have the capability of winning each game as a single entity, as opposed to go 82-0 during the season.
Yeah. But we have the capability of running the table.
Yeah. But he's clearly a guy who, he maybe doesn't give a lot of consideration or thought to how those things are going to read and what those things are going to sound like out of context. I mean, that's an incredibly difficult thing. I can't imagine having to guard my words, knowing that every single thing I say is going to end up out of context in, you know, a screenshot on somebody's tweet. But like the whole super team thing earlier in the season, just put those two things together and it just seems so delusional.
Delusional is the word. Like, I can't imagine that there's some, I can't imagine what runs through his head on that one, because that one was no other way to take it. He's like, we got super teams, you know, Warriors, Knicks. It's like, whoa.
I mean, I know you want to like you want to project confidence, and nobody wants to be like, well, you know, like we're just hoping to not be the worst team in the Eastern Conference. You know, right. You want to set some goals for yourself, but the, you know, language can be a dangerous thing, I suppose, when used not carefully.
Yeah. Right. All right. So going back to the Olympics, I think it's good that I didn't podcast about the Olympics specifically, because I think I would have. I was so high on Australia and I was so down on the US, and I think there was a couple of days where I was like, man, like I think Australia is going to beat the US. But then it came out once they actually got to the elimination bracket that, you know, USA stepped up and it seemed like they finally focused. They finally locked in. I still think there was some of, you know, cause their defense was so bad. Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, Coach K never gave in and played the lineups that I wanted to see. Mm-hmm. Like it seemed obvious that Kyle Lowry should be out there all the time, you know, like as much as he could play. Mm-hmm. In maybe you can put Kyrie off the ball. Like he's great off the ball, you know, but I still think maybe, you know, they were waiting till the final elimination. But did you have a sense that the U.S. might lose, or were you thinking like, nah, they'll lock in and it'll be gold once again?
No, I thought after group play that there was a chance they might get knocked out. I wasn't totally convinced that they would rise to adversity in a positive way. You know, see this with a bunch of different teams and a bunch of different players, but like, you know, when a challenge presents itself, there's some teams who sort of come together in those moments. And then there are some teams who sort of fracture, not necessarily in an ugly way, but you know, each guy is trying to beat the other team individually, instead of sort of pulling together in a cohesive sort of way. And even, you know, at the end, I don't know that the US was playing all that cohesively. It was just cohesive enough that their talent, you know, their edge in talent was able to manifest. But yeah, I definitely thought there was a chance that they could lose to Australia or Spain.
So I'm going to pick on a guy who I've made. He's kind of been a punching bag of mine, because I'll never meet him. So you talked about guys maybe not pulling together, and when it gets tough, you know, kind of not, the team started splintering. I call this Boogie Cousins syndrome. how do you think that he had campaigned openly that he wanted to be on Team USA other years? Mm-hmm. And so finally he gets the chance of Team USA. Initially he was starting and then he got moved to the bench, and he was pretty ineffective as far as, you know, he seemed to not be able to avoid early foul trouble. So I'm curious, how do you think the Boogie Cousins Team USA went? And do you think that he maybe got any of that experience or leadership that everyone credits Team USA camps with that he can carry to the regular season?
I don't know. We'll see. I think some of that leadership, like learning leadership on Team USA thing, is sort of overblown, especially because once you get on that actual team, like it's not like 12 guys are leading that team. You know, this was Durant's team or Melo's team. And so, you know, Boogie or Jimmy Butler or, you know, DeMar DeRozan are not necessarily like practicing leadership on the brightest stage in these Olympics. I think probably the actual product of this kind of experience is just like supreme confidence. Like I've been on the biggest world stage and we won a gold medal, and that's the kind of thing that these guys are carrying back to their teams. And I don't know that Cousins is a guy who is ever lacking for confidence, so he seems like a guy who may not benefit as much from this kind of experience as somebody else, maybe like a Jimmy Butler or a DeMar DeRozan or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I get increasingly worried that Boogie Cousins is a, quote, great player, end quote, who isn't very good at winning basketball games. Like, I don't know if he possesses. I mean, I've been doubling down on this, and I've been right, and so I keep being right for years, you know. But at some point, perhaps it will turn around. Maybe it's this year with his team, you know, of six centers that they'll finally get it. I do think he's starting a little bit behind the eight ball this year, what with the roster that Vlade has given him. But I get worried. I'm like, I don't know if just a worse player with a little bit more leadership humility, you know, could not make the squads he's on better. Yeah. But
well, it's anyway. It's so hard. Like the nature of the NBA is, you know, he's locked into a one franchise, and often that means locked into one sort of organizational situation, which in his case is terribly chaotic. And so it's like we may never know, like we may not get a sample. He might be in Sacramento until, you know, he's on the downside of his career, and he may still be playing right. with five centers and Rajon Rondo and, you know, like
flotsam
and jetsam from the rest of the other teams around the league. And so, it's a bummer because, I don't know we'll ever sort of fully appreciate what he can do when he's playing basketball in the middle of an enormous like dumpster fire.
Right, right. And it's definitely a chicken or egg situation kind of in Sacramento where you're like the franchise is terrible. Like, is it rubbing off on people and the players and the coaching staff, or is it, you know, but anyway, let's focus on, so Hickory High seems to be an obvious reference to Hoosiers, your old blog. Are you from Indiana and you call yourself a Pacers fan?
No, I am a Pacers fan. I actually grew up in upstate New York.
Okay.
And neither of my parents were really sports fans, so I had no inherited loyalties that were passed down to me. So my aunt lived in Indianapolis when I was growing up, and we would go visit her a couple times a year, and she was a big basketball fan. So we would always go to IU Hoosiers games and go to Pacers game. So those were the teams that I sort of fell in love with first. But I get a lot of stuff about Hickory High. People are always, you know, tweeting me like, oh, Hoosiers is terrible, or, you know, what do you think about the movie? And I actually don't care for the movie that much. It's not one of my favorite sports movies. But I started my blog on a total whim. I was an elementary school teacher, and I was at work, and I was like so just like sort of bored and miserable one day. And I was like, I'm just going to start one of those WordPress blog things. And I was like, if I don't do it right now, I'm never going to do it. And so I was trying to think of a unique basketball name that was not like the low, you know, the baseline,
right,
you know, blog or whatever. I was trying to come up with something unique, and Hickory High was the only thing I could think of. So I had like 15 minutes before the kids came back from lunch, and it was like, I got to do it right now. So Hickory High it was, and I just sort of went with it. But I probably have not seen Hoosiers in a decade at least, and don't necessarily hold the movie in that high esteem.
It's one of those movies that like I think it's a sports movie that I watched as a kid and was like, this is awesome, and I love it. And then like when I go into adulthood, like Spike Lee's like, yeah, Hoosiers is like super racist. And then you watch the movie and you're like, oh yeah, this is really racist. You know, like.
I definitely feel different about it as an adult than I did as a kid. And the funniest thing about this relation is that I get, I still will get Twitter followers who are like, I don't know where there is an actual Hickory High school. It doesn't exist. The Hickory High in the movie was a fictional high school that was based on the actual high school, which was called Milan, that was in Indiana. And so I'll get parents of students at Hickory High and wherever Hickory High School actually is, will follow my Twitter account, and I'll get, you know, like carpet cleaners from Hickory, North Carolina, and things like that will follow me on Twitter. And that always gives me a chuckle.
That is pretty funny. But so you are a Pacers fan. And how, like, you've been that again since you were a kid going down to Indianapolis to see those games?
Yeah, I started really sort of paying attention like in the mid 90s, like 94, 95 are like the first years that I remember like watching as many games as I could on TV. So kind of right in the heart of Reggie Miller's prime, and, you know, through those years with the Knicks and, you know, the second half of Jordan's three-peat, that was kind of my basketball petri dish.
Yeah, I was actually a really big Pacers fan too during that time, because again, living in Nashville, I was, you know, NBA agnostic, just kind of picking up teams here and there. But I hated the Bulls. I hated Michael Jordan. I guess I've always kind of been a little anti-flow, and so like everyone was a Jordan fan, you know, in school, and so I was like, you know, I was cheering for the Pacers. I hated the Knicks, and so I was cheering for the Pacers. It always seemed like it was the Pacers going up against them. But let's focus on this year's Pacers squad. So you told me in confidence you're not excited about this Pacers season. What's your issue, man?
I think they made some I've talked about this in a few places, but I feel like it's this situation where they're saying one thing and then the moves they're making are going in a different direction, or are maybe like unnecessary compromises short-sighted compromises. So after whatever it was last summer, after that season Paul George missed and they didn't make the playoffs and they sort of muddled through, they were going to remake themselves. They were going to be pace and space. They wanted small ball, versatile lineups. And that was the focus. And I thought Frank Vogel did a really good job with that last year, given the pieces that he had. And it was sort of a, you know, like a one summer shift that he was asked to do, and I thought he did a really good job. So then they drop Vogel, and the moves they've made, I think, are missing the big picture. I feel like one of the key pieces of their defense was George Hill and his ability to defend, you know, both backcourt positions, his ability to make plays on the ball, and, you know, his willingness to just stand in the corner and sublimate his entire offensive game to whatever everybody else wants to do. And so swapping him out for Jeff Teague, I think, you know, Teague's maybe a little better on the ball, a little better creating shots in the pick and roll, but he's going to need the ball in his hands, which makes Monte Ellis and Rodney Stuckey even more redundant. He's nowhere near the defender that George Hill is. So I think that's going to make their defense worse. I love Miles Turner, but he's still only in his second season. And I think letting Jan Mahinmi go to move Turner into the starting lineup and bringing in Al Jefferson, I think that's going to make their defense dramatically worse this year. Sort of that combination of second-year Turner and Al Jefferson. And then Thad Young, I think he addresses some of what they were really lacking in a versatile, you know, sort of up-tempo power forward last year. But he's not a three-point shooter. And I know people have been like, well, you know, he shot 34% one year with the 76ers. But, you know, he's not a floor spacer. So all of a sudden they've got this sort of tight spacing, a little more redundancy, players who need the ball in their hands. And I think the defense is going to be a lot worse. I think they're, you know, at best, they're maybe as good as they were last year. And it doesn't look like they're building towards what they say they want to be.
Right. So you mentioned the say one thing and do the other. Like when they fired Vogel, Larry Bird was saying, like, you know, it feels like we need a new voice in here. And then he hires Nate McMillan, who's been on the staff with Vogel. Like he's the same voice. Yeah. You know, it's just like, all right. And then he talks about pace and space, which I don't know how much we have all these basketball legends running teams, like Larry Bird, you know, beloved Indiana, you know, God. And then like, you know, Phil Jackson in New York. I feel like these guys say stuff now where it's like, oh yeah, we're going pace and space, where it's like, I really wanted to be like, Larry, in your words, what does pace and space mean?
Yeah.
You know, like you're repeating this catchphrase. So anyway, yeah, they say they want pace and space, but then they assemble a team that I guess is arguably faster with Thad Young and Jeff Teague. Mm-hmm. But those guys are not the space. That's only half of it. You know, like that's the pace. And then the Al Jefferson thing really, I don't know, that really made me scratch my head. Like, I feel like I like Al Jefferson as much as anybody in the world. Like, he's real fun to watch, you know, like – but he doesn't move the ball. He doesn't defend. He has injury problems. He's old. Like, they signed him for 3 years. So you have Thad Young signed for years. You know, it looks like Teague's going to be there. And then Jefferson. Yeah, I guess you can be excited. I mean, I guess the weird part for me is they have Paul George, who, you know, I guess is like the second best player in the East. Mm-hmm. So, like, that's a huge leg up on everybody else. But then it's like, oh, but now everything else is just kind of clogged around them. And
yeah,
you mentioned you thought maybe they'd be as good. Yeah, I can't tell either. Like I look at the roster and I'm like, I don't know what we're hoping for here.
Yeah, like, it seems like their ceiling is the middle of the playoff seeds. Like I think there's still sort of a clear tier below Boston, Toronto, and maybe two tiers below Cleveland. And I'm not seeing like where there's another year for this team. You know, like, it's not like you take this roster and add, you know, one more key free agent next year and all of a sudden they're sort of an Eastern Conference contender. I think and the pace and space thing, going back to like Larry Bird, he gave an interview a few weeks ago and he talked about how he really just wants them to score more points, and then he talked about points per game, which is fine. And it's sort of but it's like a clearly a focusing on the pace thing. It's like, we want to get up and down the floor to score more points, but that doesn't like and maybe I'm assuming, but it seems to reflect a lack of understanding of what pace actually means and how that connects to everything else, you know. To win basketball games, you need to probably be good on offense and defense. And if you are just focused on pace while building a terrible defense, you're not going to, you know, you're not going to be at the level that you want to be. And it seems clear to me that their defense took a big step back. Like just talking about, we need to score more seems so sort of, blinded, or I don't know, just looking at one tiny little piece and ignoring all the other things that connect to it.
Right. It definitely seems almost like a frustration play, because the Pacers have been good. They were good on defense under Vogel. They were really good at defense last year. And it's like, yeah, I'm tired of losing at defense. We're losing because of offense. Like, let's now lose because of defense. Like, you know, let's switch it up. Maybe that'll be more fun. Maybe that'll keep the fans in the stand. Do you think they are just hoping? I know a team like Memphis, they don't consider, I don't think that franchise considers, you know, ever blowing it up. Like, I think they're just going to like, making the playoffs is a huge win for that community, mm-hmm. and for that franchise. And like, I know the Hawks were stuck on that, and people are like, you know, like the Hawks made the playoffs and made the second round of the playoffs many times. And it was like, and so some fans, we get into this like, oh, but they're not, they need to blow it up. They're not going to win a title. And I guess as a fan of a small market team, I'm totally content with, let's just get, like, if we get in the playoffs, that's cool. For me, that's a fun season of watching basketball. Mm-hmm. I don't think, you know, the window to win a title is so small that I think you just have to appreciate, once you get in the playoffs, you actually have a good chance of, you know, things falling into place. So do you think the Pacers franchise is thinking that way? They're thinking like, let's just keep getting in the playoffs. That's enjoyable for our fans. That's what we prioritize. Or do you think they're looking at this and saying like, we got Paul George and now we made these pieces for pace and space. Now we can contend with the Cavs.
I mean, there's something to that. Like, we've got Paul George. We saw in the playoffs last year where they, you know, they almost beat Toronto. And it was mostly just because of Paul George. So there might be some of that. I don't know if it's all this. Some of that may be sort of subconscious, like, you know, we want a roster that gets us to this level, and then we're going to hope we, you know, catch lightning when we get there, and that'll be enough. But like, for me, George is only 26, and I know that maybe there's some pressure, like, this is his prime, he's coming into his prime, we've got to make sure that we're as close to contending as possible so that we don't waste these years. But seems like not trading that pick for Thad Young, taking a young player there with a high, you know, high upside, I probably wouldn't have been Caris LeVert for me. Then letting Turner and George sort of grow together and be willing to lower the expectations for a year or two to fighting for the eighth seed, and then maybe have something that's sort of organically better 2 years down the road, where you don't have to, where the plan doesn't have to be catch lightning. So I think maybe there's some of that, but it's hard to tell too, because it seems like they may really believe that they are as good as Boston or Toronto or Cleveland. And it's hard, you know, like going back to the Derrick Rose thing, it's hard to tell like what of that is bluster and sort of right. slightly overdoing it on the required confidence that you need to exude in interviews, and how much of that is real. I mean, I think it was Reggie Miller said he thinks they can win the Eastern Conference this year and they're as good as the Cavs, which, I mean, just seems absurd to me.
Right. So putting you on the spot, would you, if you somehow wrestled power away from Larry Bird, what would be your first order of business? I mean, one of the tough things is their roster is, I mean, I guess they have a lot of movable pieces, but they have a lot of pieces where people are like, meh, you know, like, don't really want that guy. So, like, what would you do, or what would your focus be on trying to turn this roster into maybe having a little more upside or a little more sustainable upside?
I think I agree. Like, I think they are I don't think they are necessarily wedded to the idea of Monte Ellis and Rodney Stuckey. I think there was probably instant buyer's remorse on both of those last year. But they have not been able to trade them. I don't know that there have been direct reports like they're actively looking to trade them, but I'm sure they have been fielding calls or trying to make calls and have not found a lot of interest, which is understandable. I don't think there was a lot of interest when they signed them. But for me, the thinking about this style of play that they supposedly want to play, that they want to be up-tempo, they want to be versatile, and they want to spread the floor a little bit more. It seems to me structurally the pivot point is power forward. Like how your power forward plays, or whatever you call the guy who sort of plays in that position between the center and the wing. It seems like the style of play that guy works in is what dictates what works for your team, right? So it's like Draymond Green allows the Warriors to play the way they want to play. And I think you see that in a bunch of other situations, like you have to have a power forward who fits that style of play. And so I think settling for Thad Young was like, well, we can get, 70% of what we want out of our power forward here. And for me, it seems like the prudence or the long-term approach would be to figure out what kind of guy do we want in that four spot to play with Miles Turner, to complement Miles Turner, to allow Paul George to do all the things that he does. And I would be searching for that guy. That would be the one place that I would not compromise. That would be the one place that I would be willing to have be, filled with replacement level guys until I see that guy in the draft, or until I see that free agent that I really want to throw money at. There was a few guys in this year's draft that I thought were interesting that ended up not falling to them, but I thought who ended up not falling to that pick that they had traded to the Nets. But I thought like Juan Hernan Gomez, who the Nuggets took, sort of would have been that perfect guy. He could play a little three, could play a little four, big body, super athletic, really aggressive defensively. Possibly have the potential to become a 3-point shooter down the road. So I can't remember who else, but there was a few other guys like that. So
I would go with the, I kind of fell in love with Yabusele.
Yeah.
Is that Gershon?
Yeah.
Yeah. I know some people thought he wasn't impressive. I fell in love with what I saw in Summer League. I'm like, this guy.
Yeah.
Like, finishing with both hands, big body, like low base, and like shooting threes. Like give me some of that.
Yeah.
But he also he went before the Pacers picked.
Yeah. And admittedly, I'm not a draft expert, but there was another guy named Peter Cornelli. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, from the French league, who was a 7-footer, a 40% 3-point shooter, really active and mobile, needed a lot of work on his body and had not had a ton of experience. But and he ended up going, I don't know, maybe in the 50s.
Right.
So I probably was overestimating him mostly just watching YouTube highlights. But it seems like that would be the thing for me. Figure out who is the guy long term who plays the style they want at that position and sort of has the full package. If they were going to chase somebody, maybe it's like somebody like Bobby Portis, who still has some developing to do and some things to show. But figuring out who that guy is, and that's where I would put all the resources. And then once you have that filled in, then I'd worry about filling in everything else.
Yep. I think you could probably make some leeway. I don't know if you got eyes for Jamichael Green, but I know Chris Wallace has always been enamored with Monte Ellis. You might be able to trick him there. I know the numbers don't work. You'd have to throw in Vince Carter and something else, but I still feel like I feel like Chris Wallace has mentioned guys like CJ Miles, Rodney Stuckey, and Monte Ellis all in the past. I feel like the Pacers could pressure that. And I know the Grizzly.
There you go. You can have all three.
Grizzly, maybe one.
Yeah.
They can take one. All right. For closing, I'm going to give you a brief again, on the spot, game of scones, which is our trivia. You live in Vermont, right?
I do.
Okay. I'm gonna see how many NBA players in history can you name from Vermont.
I am pretty sure that there are no NBA players in the history of the league from Vermont.
That is exactly correct, Ian. Very
I know because I have looked.
Yeah. Very proud of you. Yeah, it's a state.
I can tell you. There's one from our neighbor in New Hampshire.
Oh yeah, who's that?
I believe it's only one. That would be the Red Mamba, Matt Bonner.
Oh wow, I didn't know he was from New Hampshire.
Actually, maybe I got that wrong. Maybe Scalabrini's the Red Mamba, but Matt Bonner, yes, Matt Bonner is the pride and joy of New Hampshire.
That's pretty fantastic. Well, thanks for joining me. Anything else you want to get to? Want to get off your chest, or anything you want to promote?
No, I had a great time, and hopefully everybody who listens to this episode subscribes, leaves you a nice review, and comes back for more.
That would be perfect. All right, thanks, Ian. You have a good time, thanks. And I will talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks to Ian Levy for taking the time to voluntarily talk to me. Check him out on Twitter at Hickory High, though there is no relation to Hoosiers, apparently. Remember to write those iTunes reviews to win Fan Essentials gear. Use the code FBBF, as in Fast Break Breakfast, at fanessentials.net to get yourself a discount. All right, follow us on Twitter at Fast Break Break. Like us on Facebook. Tell your buddies about us. Thanks for listening. You guys are the best. And remember, breakfast is the most important thing.